fuck Football Focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
Hey, as a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFF.
Do you not understand that they are that way because you're Joe Flacco?
And you just like to discredit things that people deserve credit for.
That you can't possibly be expected to defend that.
Talk about the game, Sam. So, who cares about what people think about us?
Yeah, I like football. I like football season and all the things that go with it.
Welcome into the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Palazzolo back here with Sam Monson talking all things NFL. We're going to focus on breakout players today, Sam.
Yeah.
But first, we got some housekeeping. We have all sorts of stuff that has happened. The PFF 50 is out. Most of it on PFF.com. Is the rest of it coming out today or tomorrow? Thursday or Friday?
Today, I think.
Okay. So by the time you're listening to this, the PFF 50 will be out. We have pre-recorded. Ooh, I gave it away. We've pre-recorded the PFF 50 episodes. Those are coming out next week. Two episodes breaking down all of the best players in the NFL. So get ready for the full analysis, and then you can blame Sam for anything you disagree with. We also anticipated a Bobby Wagner interview. We had Bobby Wagner. We had it slated. He backed out. He dropped the ball. So it's okay. We're going to get him back on here. But we did the entire episode teasing this Bobby Wagner interview that will not be there as part of the Monday episode.
Yeah.
So rather than going back to edit the episode, it's a lot of work. I mentioned it a bunch of times. It's called professional tease in the business here, Sam. We're not going to go back and fix it. So you're going to listen to the Monday episode, and when I say Bobby Wagner is going to be there, just ignore it and just know he'll be there on a future show.
Of course, the people that are only listening to that show and not listening to this one aren't going to get your warning.
We'll put a disclaimer in the no Bobby Wagner's will be appearing
not
on
featuring
the show.
Bobby Wagner.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
we'll
right.
do that. Or we'll put that. Like a timestamp in like where Bobby Wagner doesn't show up or something.
That'd be great. Yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, at 1 hour, 22 minutes, Bobby Wagner not appears.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that's good.
I like it.
We even did an outro like
that. All mistakes should be fixed.
We even said like, thanks Bobby Wagner for joining the show.
Yeah.
That's fake.
Didn't happen.
Never happened.
Never came
out. He'll be on later.
It's a good thing we didn't try and like vamp and like talk about some things that Bobby said.
Hey, Bobby said some interesting things, didn't he? Nope.
Yeah.
No, he didn't
show up.
Wasn't so we are the most professional podcast in the world.
Well,
so that's
the
how
beauty
we do
about
it.
Just scratching the surface of professionalism. You don't have to go through all the hassle of like the proper way to fix things.
When expectations are low,
right?
You always
just roll
them.
Right on through it.
That's it.
You can screw up however you want. Nobody cares.
It's a good rule for life. Keep expectations as low as possible. Always exceed them. Because everybody, you know, people only react based off previous expectations. That's it. Keep them low. Other cool stuff that's happened here. People paid to have Sam dress up like me.
Yeah.
Minor league baseball.
We hit the goal. So we're now like...
I found some other stuff. I've got my classic...
You sent me a picture of some gloves you had that are like the same size as the mitt that I was holding the other day.
I've got my classic Franklin batting gloves. There's only one batting glove in the NFL, in Major League Baseball. Like one awesome batting glove.
So I'm going to have to wear like one mitt, Franklin. One glove?
You could mix it up.
Okay.
Like, I would wear the gloves, you know, cold gloves, days or whatever. When I hit, I did hit eight times professionally, and I wore those batting gloves.
These gloves you sent me a picture of, they're so large that they make the sunglasses that were put on them look like child's toy.
I found
like,
my Oakleys.
They don't look like real sunglasses because the gloves are that big.
Might be perspective.
No, it's not, because I've seen the size of your hands. I don't think that my fingers will reach the finger wells of those gloves.
Yeah.
Like, that's so how ridiculous
I think we'll
look.
Keep all of the equipment there, and you just kind of, like, cycle through it. Sometimes you wear your
like
glove.
Through the show?
Or we'll play innings, right? So if you're in the field, you wear the glove. If we're hitting,
we need
to wear
the
batting glove.
The seventh inning. What's the music they play?
Take me out to the ball game.
Yeah, let's play that at the seventh inning.
We'll get Harry Carey. We'll get Harry Carey to sing for the seventh inning stretch, or at least a recording of it.
Yeah. I kind of wish that I hadn't guaranteed the silly facial hair before we hit the goal, but so that's going to happen as well.
Yeah, so the goal has been set. So sometime like late July, early August, we'll probably.
I was telling that to Laura, my wife, and she doesn't like the beard, and she's been like asking me to shave it for the better part of like 5 years.
So
now.
She's ready for this.
Well, so I was saying like, here's the thing, right? Obviously, you have to shave down the bottom part, but then at some point, you have to shave off the ridiculous top stuff that you've left. Otherwise, you're. But so I was saying, the last time I grew the beard, the worst period of beard growth is that first 2 weeks. Because for me, it gets itchy as hell down there. It drives me nuts. And I was saying the last time when I grew this that, like, I'm not doing this again. Like, this is so annoying that the next time I shave the beard off, it's gone. It's not coming back. So I was telling Laura, like, this is your shot. Like, because I'm going to try and grow it back. And if I snap through that, like, that is your best chance of getting rid of the beard, is that I'm not going to be able to get through that 2 weeks of, like, neck beard itching.
Oh, yeah. That's fun.
Yeah. So that's your shot.
She must be excited. Well, doesn't matter. Okay. Sorry, I was reading a message.
Yeah. But anyway, we said this on the next week's shows as well. We now need a new charity goal. We've hit your one for the Fro Show. We hit my one for the Minor League Sam dress-up day, which will be coming down the pike whenever you get your crap out of Massachusetts.
NFLpodcast@pff.com.
Yes, NFLpodcast@pff.com. We need a new idea. A, new charity. If you've got a cool charity that, you know, needs some money, give us a shout. Two, what should we do? What should the forfeit, what should the thing be that we're raising money for? We need ideas. So give us ideas.
All right. Let's do it. Yeah, I want to hear. I want to hear from everybody. So it's great. And we appreciate everybody. Wow, great listeners we have. We appreciate everybody for donating.
It's awesome. We've raised a lot of money already. We just started doing this.
For the kids, for the men, for everybody. So
kids and the men.
I'm just saying, a lot of different people. So we keep raising money, and we appreciate you guys. We appreciate being able to do this. So I'm glad that all went through.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's get into breakout players.
Okay.
All right. Positivity season, not your type of thing. You should have like fall off a cliff players. You can have that episode.
Collapse
just
players.
To balance it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's gonna creep back toward terrible players?
Creep back towards awful.
It's breakout player season over at pff.com. You wrote the 8 third year breakout players. We're gonna have year 2 breakout players, but we're just gonna go. Let's just discuss who are the players. And we hint at this a little bit on the 50 episode in the future. The guys that we hinted at, guys that were going to show up on the 50 next year and various things like that. Like, who's going to make it a year from now? But who are the guys that are going to take a big step this year? Let's throw some names out there. You want to start?
Sure. I want to start with the one you don't like, Rashawn Gary. Rashawn Gary, here's the thing. We didn't like him as a prospect coming out. It wasn't because he didn't have talent or didn't have the tools to be a great player. It was because there was no real evidence that it was happening anytime soon. And inevitably, if he was going to become that kind of player, it was going to take a few years. And it looks like it is. Like, year one for Gary was not good. Overall grade of 56, I think.
Year two, though, was
better. Much better.
5 good games.
Which is a hell of a lot better than no good games.
5 out of 18.
Yeah.
26% of his games.
Right. That's better than 0% of your games by quite a lot. It's an order of magnitude better.
True.
So project that forward to year 3. Now, look, I know
52% of his games.
I know you've seen the reports that say Rashawn Gary was the best player at Packers minicamp and OTAs. He's carving it up when nobody's in pads. So you add that to the fact that he's already taken a huge step forward, 56 to 68 in overall grade. A couple of games in there that were really good against, you know, reasonable opposition. He's always had the physical tools to do it. So year 3 is going to be Rashawn Gary's breakout.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it. We'll see what I'm always wary of the late season small sample size because it makes for a good story.
Yes, which is why I've written it.
Right. It makes for a good story here in June.
Mm-hmm.
He figured out the light switch went on, right? Week 16, because that was it. I'll find his splits, but basically in week 16, he had a 90.7 grade against Tennessee in the snow. Week 17, 90 grade against Chicago. And then divisional round against the Rams, 81. Then he dropped to a 53 in the NFC Championship. Don't worry about that. So that all led to a 68 overall grade. Before that, I'm just guessing he was probably low 50s before that stretch.
Whatever.
So how much do we want to weigh what he did down the stretch? Now, the story is most interesting to us because Rashawn Gary goes number 12 overall in the 2019 draft.
Mm-hmm.
Freak athleticism. Great movement skills, great power at 280 pounds, and he was that classic upside projectable player.
Yep.
And if we're seeing it, it just, you know, it adds data to the story. This guy did take, you know, 600 snaps before he broke out, and now he's starting to find his way. Or we look at it and it's like, well, 2 years, the Packers have gotten just okay, really below average production out of him, but then okay production down the stretch, and that's a bit of a disappointment. So it is a big year for Rashawn Gary, and I could see a year three breakout, and it's going to be one to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's got a shot of doing it. Like, I'm not saying he's going to be amazing, but I think year three is, if you're going to see a high-level Rashawn Gary, it's going to come this year. Now, that doesn't mean it will, but I think he's a pretty good candidate to take a significant step forward, given that he already showed reasonable progress.
I want our listeners to follow. This is going to be an interactive game. How many consecutive shows can I mention Quinnen Williams as a breakout player? I think there's probably one.
Well, that's cheating because you already know how many, at least up until next week.
Because it definitely happens in next week's episodes.
Yeah.
But then I think I could keep it going. I could keep it going probably every show in July. There's definitely a couple in the past couple weeks where I knocked it out.
Okay.
So
you don't think that's going to get annoying?
Quinnen Williams, breakout player. You heard it here first.
I doubt that's true.
81.4 overall grade last year. That's solid. High 70s run defense.
The funny thing about it is, like, that's the one you're turning into a game, and it's the one where, like, everyone else is like, he broke out last year. What are you talking about?
He did not break out last year. He was solid last year. He was fine.
I'm not saying, like, yeah, but everyone else thinks he broke out last year.
No one else thinks that.
Loads of people think that.
Who thinks he broke out?
Ton of people.
He's going to break out further. Like, this year he becomes a star. We're talking
that,
star
I think, is
Quinnen
possible.
Williams.
Yes.
Last year he had 39 pressures.
Yeah.
I think he's a 50 pressure guy. In Robert Saleh's system, they're going to need him. Four-man rush, they're going to do that a lot. Defensive line around him is getting a little bit better. He is really good in the run game, finishing plays. Run stop percentage, one of the best in the league last year. But this is where he takes a step forward as a pass rusher. And, you know, he's a guy, he only had that small sample size of play at Alabama. And I think some of those guys do sometimes take some time because he just doesn't have a ton of experience. He's got a little over 1,000 snaps of experience. And his next 1,000 snaps are going to be star-level play, not just, oh, he's a pretty good player.
And his career at Alabama took some time to catch fire.
Right.
Like he was one of those players that was a slow burn right up until that final season that was incredible and made him such a high draft pick. There's reason to think that his NFL career might follow a similar tack.
I am just looking at your eight third-year breakout players. Do you know how many Alabama players are on it? There's four.
I don't.
No. Half of your third-year breakout players. Damian Harris.
Yep.
Quinnen Williams, who we just mentioned. Jonah Williams. And Irv Smith.
All right.
It's all Alabama players.
Yeah?
That's great. So Jonah Williams is another one that I agree with from your list quite a bit. I mean, last year was his second year, but his first year of actually playing football. He looked good in pass protection. He reminds me, from a trajectory standpoint, of Jake Matthews from the Falcons. If you look at Jake Matthews' splits, Jake Matthews has become one of the better pass protectors in the NFL. I think Jonah is on his way perhaps becoming that guy. His run block grade was in the 50s last year, though, so he wasn't great in that area. That's kind of how Jake Matthews has been. I think there's some similarities there, but, you know, again, I always mention offensive linemen years 3 and 4.
Yeah.
So I think Jonah, coming from a pretty good baseline, you know, 70 grade last year, I think that's going to get even better for
sure.
That's
the thing. Like, he was a legit first round talent when he came out, lost all of his rookie year to injury. Last year was effectively his rookie season. And he was pretty good. Like, not amazing, but you compare him to, like, Tristan Wirfs was different level to anybody else. That guy was, like, Pro Bowl, All-Pro caliber right tackle right out of the gate. That's extremely unusual. The rest of the first-round tackles last year were various shades of pretty good, and then Andrew Thomas, who was bad for most of it. But if you essentially lump Jonah Williams in with that group, like, he holds his own with the guys who were pretty good. And then, you know, Tristan Wirfs off on his own. But if you then project, okay, usually offensive linemen take 2-3 years to get it all together, and you start to see what they're really capable of by the end of that stretch, like, you should start to feel pretty good about where Jonah Williams can be. And I think that's one of the reasons why the Bengals drafted Ja'Marr Chase, not Penei Sewell, because they like Jonah Williams. They haven't seen anything to say, yeah, we were totally wrong about this guy. What we thought he was going to be is bunk. We need to have a massive upgrade to Penei Sewell and draft him and figure out wide receiver later. They think he'll be a good player. And I think, like, there's no reason to doubt that. Like, he's on the right course to be a good, if not necessarily great, left tackle.
PFF premium stats, all part of your PFF elite package. You go to the Jonah Williams page and you see those splits. We grade every single player on every play. So it evened out to a 70 overall grade, but 53 as a run blocker, 75 as a pass blocker. So tightening up those splits will be huge for Jonah in year two for him, year three, really.
But if you're going to have a big split like that,
you'd rather be that way.
Better this way.
So the other Alabama players, Damian Harris, running back from the New England Patriots, Irv Smith from the Minnesota Vikings. I would argue Irv Smith's role is pretty crucial for the Vikings. They Absolutely. Need a third target, and I think Irv is definitely the early favorite to be that guy.
They do, and they also, like, Kyle Rudolph leaving has opened up this wealth of targets for Irv Smith to become a much bigger part of that offense. It's funny, when you look at, like, if you combine the Irv Smith and Kyle Rudolph targets last year, you basically get one heavy-ish usage tight end. Not even like, you know, Travis Kelce, not even like the massive usage guys, just top 10 somewhere. The question is, with Kyle Rudolph no longer there, is that the way it's going to shake out, or do the Vikings like having, you know, multiple tight ends be the threat? And are we going to see Irv Smith's role essentially double in size, or is he going to end up like splitting carry or splitting touches with like Tyler Conklin or whoever it is behind him? Now, that's, I think, the concern. The data would say keep loading up Irv Smith, because that guy hasn't had the biggest role in the world, but when the ball's come his way, Kirk Cousins has a passer rating of 125. So you should probably up his workload until you find like a reason not to. Certainly when you look at like where the alternatives are, like, do you give Irv Smith 90 targets, or do you for some reason find a way of giving Tyler Conklin 45? I don't really see a reason to get the ball to Tyler Conklin until you find a reason to stop giving Irv Smith touches.
Irv Smith, tight end one potential in fantasy football. And if you like fantasy football, Sam, and if you like playing fantasy for money, you need to check out Underdog Fantasy. Underdog's got everything, including season-long and playoff best ball. Best ball is a season-long game where you draft a team like you normally do, but that's it. There's no in-season roster management. Underdog automatically selects your best performers each week, saving you loads of time. Go to Underdog Fantasy and deposit $10 using promo code PFF. That's it, $10, and you get a free PFF Edge annual subscription. That's promo code PFF. Draft now at Underdog Fantasy. So if you do sign up for the $10, get the draft guide for next year. You get all this year's stuff.
College preview guide coming.
College preview is.
You need to create like a sizzle reel of your transitions into the ads. You know that you're getting right up there with like a baseball announcer. You know,
it's very natural, right? It's like, right. Speaking of fantasy football, I have a fantasy football ad read.
Look at that, pop to deep right field. Speaking of pop, Dr. Pepper's new 23 flavor.
Oh, look at that. That's right good. In there. That's really good. Yeah. That's a good one. It's like,
the growth you've displayed in this area has been amazing. Like I'm really appreciative.
You just got to train your brain to think about, okay, what's next, you know, and then
how can I get into ad read? Yeah, how can I get into Underdog?
I think turning turning our emailer,
I don't remember,
Devin, was it Devin,
maybe
turning our emailer and turning our email into a fantasy football read, though, that was a turning point. I think that was really smooth. The other Alabama player you mentioned, Damian Harris. Speaking of fantasy football, Damian Harris is a running back.
He is.
It's a fantasy football position. He had a 90-plus grade.
Yeah, like the top three graded running backs last season are Derrick Henry, Damian Harris, Dalvin Cook. Now, okay, the other two did it on a much greater sample size and workload, but the point is, like, that in terms of a per-snap grade, that's where Damian Harris was last season. He was right up there with the best running backs in the NFL. He was I really liked him coming out, and then it took a while to get going, and, you know, Sony Michel drafted in the first round, but Damian Harris is good.
Just a Alabama players everywhere. 86.9 rushing grade. Harris was very difficult to tackle. He did provide a boost to the Patriots offense last year. So you're calling all of Alabama as breakout players. My favorite guy on your third-year breakout list, though, Darnell Savage.
Okay.
First-round pick for the Packers. Another first-round pick for the Packers. Absolutely loved him coming out of Maryland. And I think we've seen mere flashes of what he can do. I mean, when he patrols the middle of the field, his closing speed is
nuts,
exceptional.
And not just the middle of the field, but like anywhere. Once he sees it and goes,
true.
It's heat-seeking missile.
I just love, I mean, yes, he does it from two high alignments. I just love when you put him in that robber role, the thing I think Tyrann Mathieu has been so good at. When you put him in the middle of the field, he's making plays on passes that you're just not supposed to make plays on, and just knows how to finish, gets his hand on the ball. He's got 9 pass breakups the last couple of years, plus 6 interceptions. It's the same issue, though, that he had at Maryland, is the missed tackles, right? He's got 30 in his 2 years. And, you know, if you can cut back on those, great. If you can't, it is sometimes a part of a guy's game. Like, Earl Thomas had a lot of missed tackles, right? And you just kind of, like, balance that out. Because a lot of them are just, if you're losing to leverage, it's not as bad. If you're losing to the edge, or when you're not where you're not supposed to, it is bad. So not every missed tackle is the worst thing in the world.
And also, particularly that style of player, Savage and Earl Thomas, guys that see something and then fly to the ball with zero. Like, those guys are not breaking down before they get to the ball carrier to make sure they're not. Like, they are coming like a missile, trying to make contact. And sometimes that guy is going to see it coming just quick enough, take a half step to the side, and you're not going to get him to the ground. But even just the act of having been there that quickly and hit him and forced him to make that sideways step has caused the play to be delayed enough for someone else to make the play, right? So it's not the worst thing in the world to miss a tackle like that. And to an extent, you would like that, you know, you like that, right? It's the fact that he's making those plays where he's able to fly and disrupt that play. Even if he misses the tackle at the end of it, it's still better than a guy that, like, didn't see it for another half second and isn't even in position to make that happen.
Yeah, and to your point, I think when you earn that reputation, when you show that you've got good ball skills, you get to places quickly, and you are going to fly around, I think that's going to discourage teams, you know, from throwing to his area, whether he's playing deep half, whether he's playing deep center field, or whether he's playing that robber role over the middle. So I think Darnell Savage, again, I don't know if it's going to show up in the grade or not, but I think it'll start showing up in his reputation, in the Packers' pass defense, and what he's able to do. You've got Brandon Staley's, the Fangio Staley scheme going to Green Bay. You'll see a lot of zone coverage, and they play to the strengths of their players. So I want to see how they use Savage this season.
And safeties generally have, like, monster career years in that system. I mean, there's, like, Eddie Jackson had, like, I think the highest PFF coverage grade we've ever seen from a safety. His last season with Fangio. Fangio leaves. Eddie Jackson's grades fall off a cliff. That's a
good point.
And in Denver, the exact same year, Justin Simmons' grades go through the roof. Like, John Johnson with the Rams, like, okay, he was always grading well, but graded well again. Like, that, there's a growing body of evidence to say that safeties within that system have fantastic seasons. If you're good. Like, if you're not good, you're probably not, you know, it's not turning you great if you suck.
So those are your third year breakout players. Also on the list, Devin Bush, Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, Devin Bush, I think he's already a good player, but the Steelers ask a lot of their linebackers. So the grade isn't there yet because, you know, it gets beat a lot because he's put in horrible situations, and that's not really anything you can do. I think year three, though, you know, year one was okay. Year two, played a couple hundred snaps and got injured. Year three is where you might see him put all that together and finally be able to sort of do all the stuff that they're asking him to do, in addition to, like, the regular thing that he's already good at in terms of just finding the ball, find ball, see ball, get ball, whatever that Greg Williams thing was. Wasn't that his thing?
I forget the exact line. I just remember.
I mean, Greg Williams has a few tenets, you know. There was, like, testicles in the C gap.
Yeah, I just
find
remember
ball,
his run
get
fits.
Ball, C ball, or whatever it is.
I just remember C gap or unfit suggestions. how do you play the run?
Yeah,
in the C gap.
It's all about the testicles
square,
in the C gap.
You got to square that thing up.
Okay, yeah,
C gap.
Sure.
So,
but I think that was one of his things. Like, we play a very simple defense here: find ball, C ball, get ball, or something like that.
Defensive.
I think there's more to it than that. But
defensive coaches are so simple. Going to be aggressive.
Some of them are. I don't, you know, I think there's more complexity to it in other systems.
Going to be aggressive. We're going to dictate. You're going to dictate to the offense. Speaking of dictating, I don't have anything. It's not a good one.
No.
But I want to tell you about PFF partnering with Symbol.
There goes my run.
Symbol, Simbull, the stock market for sports that allows you to trade sports teams like stocks and earn cash payouts when your teams win. Symbol has blended sports and the stock market to offer you a new way to invest and profit off your favorite teams, or even your least favorite teams. It doesn't matter. You could profit either way. You could profit off MLB. They're in full swing the rest of the summer. And you can still invest in NFL teams who are still making a few moves. Cut days, be some veterans out there. So get in early
and see your team's stock rise. Use promo code PFF. Deposit $10 at symbol.app/PFF to earn a free PFF annual subscription. Promo code PFF with a $10 deposit at symbol.app/PFF to earn a free annual subscription. Hey, they can't all be perfect.
No. No, I mean, look.
I did that on purpose after you complimented me. I'm like, watch this one.
Nobody's,
just jump right
in. Nobody's
into
batting
it.
1,000 here, Steve.
Either way, Underdog Fantasy and Symbol are really good. What?
Does that take the like make it natural and organic box?
Oh, that was organic.
It was just pure. It was just
I love
pure
I love
endorsement
sponsors. I was thinking the other day, I wear enough Under Armour. Where's Connor? Connor, can we call Under Armour?
Wait, like, not, you don't want to. You want to be pitching it to Under Armour. Forget Connor.
You want me to
bypass Under Armour?
I want Connor to get credit for it. Call Under Armour.
Well, tell right, Under Armour to contact Connor.
I wear your stuff every day.
That's what I'm saying.
All right. Do you guys want to? And I don't want to wear these uncomfortable jeans. I want to wear Under Armour shorts.
Under Armour shorts.
Or pants. I want to wear the pants. I got some pants. They're like very millennial. They're very short on me. Kelly.
Lululemon stuff.
Oh, their stuff's very comfortable.
I'm sure.
Not
it
as
is
comfortable as Under Armour, though.
Oh, God, no.
Under Armour pants that are shorts, but I'm
told
short.
Scoot to your
short
left a little bit. You can't see the logo there. Your mic's blocking it.
I'm told short. There you go. Under Armour. I'm told short is like it's in and it feels uncomfortable, but it's like, no, that's
well,
cool.
Surely all pants are short on you because you're 9 foot tall.
No, I found some that fit.
Oh.
But you don't want stuff that fits anymore. You want them to be.
You want them to be short.
Yeah.
Okay, so you should style just go back to buying.
It's the style.
Stuff that doesn't fit.
But I got some comfortable. I want to wear comfortable Under Armour shorts and Under Armour polos, and I dress my kids. They wear Under Armour all the time.
Uh-huh.
So I feel like we could have a good relationship, Under Armour. So, call us.
Yeah.
Email nflpodcast@pff.com.
I still want to get.
Can you send that to Under Armour, please?
We need the coffee sponsorship. Where is the coffee
emporium?
I have started buying local because people wanted it to happen.
It's June. We can beg for sponsorship.
Right. This is what I'm saying. Coffee Emporium. They're a local Cincinnati business. We can make their business go through the roof, drink this stuff live on air, and everybody wins.
What do you just want free coffee from them?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. Because I'm trying to get like the big bucks.
No, I'm not even interested in money. I just want somebody to pick up the coffee every day.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm fed up of driving in there. I want it here.
And you know what? We need, because Alyssa and Ethan need coffee too. And
right.
We neglect them. Which
PFF
is really
powered
mean
by the coffee emporium.
We're going to start picking up coffee for
think
them.
Think how much coffee Austin would get through if we got a sponsorship.
Do they have enough espresso for him?
No.
They might not. So CC Under Armour and Coffee Emporium. And if Coffee Emporium doesn't come through, I'm still open invitation out to Nespresso.
I mean, I just want coffee. I just want it here.
Anything caffeine related. Super coffee? Get them back in the mix?
They're cold stuff, right? I don't do cold coffee.
You don't do cold?
It's got to be hot.
Not even in the summer.
No. Coffee is a hot drink.
I'd say 90% of my coffees are hot. I will mix in some ice in the summer.
Don't want coffees. It. Don't want it.
Dunks? I drink Dunks.
Give me coffee. I don't care who it is. I will sell out to the giant multinational conglomerate.
I'm going for the money.
If that's what it takes. I would prefer it to be a nice local business that we can endorse and feel good about.
We're a big-time podcast. We should be having some big-time.
Yeah, but it's nice to
and
have
the coffee important.
Right. And the local business that we're lifting up together.
Kelly loves the important.
A rising tide lifts all boats, Steve.
Go check out the coffee.
We would like
emporium
to lift the coffee emporium boat.
All right, let's do it. We'll do it for Cincinnati. Yeah, we have one near our house. Kelly loves it. Iced mocha, regular mocha.
They started selling it in Kroger's and stuff. They're taking off. We can
they're
propel
in Kroger
them to the next level.
Oh, that's good. Good for the emporium. Yeah, we'll get you guys going.
Where were we?
More breakout players.
Ah.
Year two breakout players. Who's writing this article? Zach. He made an edit on this.
Yes.
We're in his Google Doc. We jumped into.
Here's a pronunciation for you.
I love June.
Zach.
Tantillo.
Tantillo?
Yeah.
Okay.
Tantillo.
Well, that's the thing.
It's probably Tantillo.
Probably. Okay. Who knows?
Zach from PFF. Sometimes we're just stealing people's work. We jumped into his Google Doc that's going to be going
we're
on
not
PFF.
Stealing it, we're using it as
we're
inspiration.
It.
We're promoting it. In fact, we're telling you to
Zach
go read Zach's article on second-year breakout players, which is on the website right now. I just couldn't look for it when I was.
I like the Isaiah Simmons list. Oh, it's on the site now. Good.
I believe so.
I like the Isaiah Simmons call by him. Isaiah Simmons, linebacker for the Cardinals. We've mentioned so many times. You mentioned the target on his back.
Yeah.
Early in the season. Kyle Shanahan's got him running in circles.
I watched the All-22 of that play again recently. It's so bad.
Like, oh, let me pull out the quick video of his negative plays.
He's right desperately now trying to get out to cover the flat, and then the running back just comes back inside. He's like, oh, no. It's It's not good. It's not good, Steve.
I'm gonna pull
up
the film.
You know the Senior Bowl reps where it's one-on-one with the linebacker and it's, you know, he's either breaking out to the flat or he's cutting back in on that pivot route. It's like that, only it never occurs to him that at any point he could come back inside until he watches him fly past him. He's like, reverse. It's not good. And that was like play number one
of his career.
Of Isaiah Simmons' career. And it's like, yeah, you know that plan we had to get the star super athlete first round pick, you know, be the new linchpin of this defense? Well, toss that in the trash because he's going to the bench and he's not coming back for the next 8 weeks.
But on a brighter note, because this is how you do it, if you just take out the first 5 weeks of the season, Sam, and you start in week six, Isaiah Simmons has the number six coverage grade among all linebackers. Now, granted, it was only about 190 or so coverage snaps. It wasn't
like
a big
pick. It's all built on that one interception.
Some plays that maybe skewed it a little bit, but I'm still a believer in Simmons as a versatile coverage player. I think the Cardinals, you know, they put him in position to have that great interception against Russell Wilson, to drop and be in position for that. And I think he could be used. He had a four pressure game down the stretch against Philadelphia where he rushed the passer 15 times. I think he could be used in that role too, where it's, you know, spy and blitz and uses athleticism. I think we'll, as he's more comfortable, I think we'll see better play from Isaiah Simmons across the board in 2021. Only 376 total snaps last year.
Yeah, because of that play, largely.
Week one, he had a 27 grade on 18 snaps.
Look, we've talked before, linebacker is a horrible position to transition to the NFL these days. It's even worse if you didn't even play linebacker properly in college. Like, Isaiah Simmons played this role that was just, hey, you're a freaky athlete. Let's line up wherever the hell you feel like it. And let's make some plays back here. Like, that was always going to take some kind of transition time to learn a proper NFL position. And you're learning one that's become harder and harder than ever before to learn. So it tallies perfectly that he was going to have a pretty rough outing year one, even more so when you consider that he had to face Kyle Shanahan twice in the year.
Who else you got as other players to watch, breakout style?
He's got Joe Burrow and T. Higgins. I mean, I would say those two have probably broken out already. The question is, like, how good will they get year two?
This could be the Quinnen jump to stardom.
Yeah, and how close will Joe Burrow get to being 100% after this knee injury? He's also got CeeDee Lamb. Again, I would argue he broke out fairly conclusively already. Jerry Jeudy, he's got on the list, which I love, obviously.
You do.
As the chairman of the Jerry Jeudy fan club. My concern with Jeudy this year is the same as it was last year, which is his quarterback is still Drew Lock. Probably. Maybe it's Teddy Bridgewater. Either way, doesn't feel like a great platform for Jerry Jeudy to have unbridled success.
Jeudy and CeeDee Lamb I like a lot. Do you think they can bridge the gap in the Justin Jefferson conversation? Like, how good is Justin Jefferson?
If CeeDee Lamb is better than Justin Jefferson next year, it wouldn't surprise me in the slightest.
So you're not, like, I love doing this. Let's rewind. Last year at this time, when Justin Jefferson came out of the draft, the big question was, like, 80% of his production came out of the slot.
Yep.
He'd had... was he like 8 for 11 in contested catches? I mean, it's some ridiculous
Small number, but
9
really
for
high
12.
Percentage.
But he was really, you saw the body control. You saw what he's able to do, but it's like, all right, he wasn't in contested situations a lot. It's not really his game, even though he showed all these traits there. So not only was he winning in the slot, he was winning on like over routes in the slot. It wasn't the most difficult thing in the world, but you could see the elements of where he was a good route runner. He reminded me of Victor Cruz, and I always try to remind people, like, Victor Cruz had a 1,500-yard season.
Yeah.
And Victor Cruz reminded me of Keenan McCardle from the Jaguars days, who was a 6'1" slot who had that shifty route running. So I think the Keenan McCardle to Victor Cruz to Justin Jefferson comparison was a good one until Justin Jefferson went out there and did everything well.
Was there a period, or am I just like able to think of a bunch of examples during the like mid-2000s where wide receivers would have one, two phenomenal seasons and then disappear and never be the same guy again, crap out of the league immediately? Just to give you some off the top of my head, without even thinking about it, Victor Cruz, Dwayne Bowe, Hakeem Nicks, Brandon Lloyd had this insane season.
So you're
out of nowhere.
The 2010s here.
Yeah. 2010s, late
2000s. Before that, you've got Michael Clayton.
Yes.
Eddie
Royal.
Rookie
year as well, right?
Michael Clayton and Eddie Royal. I think both of them, rookie season, were just incredible, right? Clayton,
certainly was his rookie year.
And Royal, I think his first year, he was like a 90 catch guy.
Right.
And he wasn't really dominant, but I think he did drop off.
Knicks, at least.
Where's Eric? Get Eric down here off the top of his head. He'll have.
Knicks, at least, I think you can explain away with knee injury. I think knee injury hit him and he wasn't the same guy again. But there's like a ton of these guys where it's like, oh, we're looking at one of the best wide receivers in the NFL now. Three years later, isn't even in the league anymore.
I mean, if you look at the Giants, they had, when Eli Manning had that, he had a 2-year run where he probably was a top 5 to 8 quarterback. It was 2011 and 12. Those were his two best years. By our grading system, and we don't have 04 and 05 when he wasn't even that good. We don't have those graded yet, but 11 and 12 are Eli's years. And we always talk team building strategy, get as many receivers as possible. Think about what they had. Hakeem Nicks, who was a legitimate big-bodied outside receiver. Victor Cruz, as we just mentioned, 1,500-yard type of guy, could play outside, could play in the slot. Mario Manningham was their number three. From a team building standpoint, that is it, right? Have three legitimate targets that are tough to cover, and they were just transitioning away from Shockey, right? Jeremy Shockey was just getting too old there. I don't think the tight end situation was great those couple of years, but Kevin Boss, was that, am I thinking of the right year where he maybe broke out?
I don't know if that's
they had here. Like Jake Ballard in the 2011 Super Bowl. Either way, like the Giants had a pretty good receiving core, and of course, and it coincided with Eli's best seasons.
Yeah, it feels like, does that happen still? Like, do we get guys who just have these random, incredible seasons, and then a couple of years later, they're gone?
I don't know. I have to look into it further.
Well, that was a fun little digression.
There's so many, but here's my question. How good is Justin Jefferson? Again, he was the fourth receiver off the board last year, fifth receiver off the board. He was by far the best rookie receiver.
Mm-hmm.
But T. Higgins was a borderline first-round pick. We already mentioned him as a breakout candidate. CeeDee Lamb. Jerry Jeudy, Henry Ruggs was in that. But are those particular guys, CeeDee Lamb, Jerry Jeudy, T. Higgins, how close to Justin Jefferson can they get? And, you know, to your point, you're not going to be that surprised if
Lamb in particular, I could easily see being better than Jefferson next year. Now, Lamb's problem is he's got to overtake somebody on the depth chart for that to happen, probably. Like, he spent almost his entire time in the slot this year, 90-something percent of his snaps, because the Cowboys already had Amari Cooper. They already have Michael Gallup. He basically needs to take Michael Gallup's job in terms of being the second receiver for him to have the same kind of production that Jefferson does. But I think he could do that. I like Gallup, but I don't really see a great reason why he would be getting those snaps over CeeDee Lamb. And when you go three wide, Gallup can still stay on the outside. Jeudy, the biggest problem he has is the quarterback situation again. So, I mean, I think he has the talent to do that. Maybe he doesn't have the skills to do the contested catch stuff, though he's got to play in there in his rookie year where he mossed some dude deep down the field. But his route running would make up for it. The problem is he's, you know, either got Drew Lock or Teddy Bridgewater throwing in the ball, so that's probably not happening.
Did Alyssa just drop a model Honda Odyssey link in here?
Yeah, yeah. So we're looking for decorations for the studio, and they found the Hot Wheels, the actual Hot Wheels of my car, and I was saying I actually have that in the glove box. Like, literally, I bought the diecast, the little metal thing.
So we could have Western and Southern helmet, your car on your side.
Yeah, we could get
my minivan on my side.
We get the Hot Wheels Camaro, the actual version of my car, sitting here, and then apparently, for God knows what reason, they make a diecast metal model of a Honda Odyssey that you could put over there, the little minivan.
Can we get four kids in there in the car seats
too? I mean, little Lego things maybe. Yeah,
we'll put all the kids in mine as well.
Yeah.
I like it. That's good decoration. That's not, now we're starting to come, it's starting to come together.
It's all coming up.
And if you want to contribute to our decorations, you can email us for an address and send some stuff. Cuz that's what you're always begging for people to send some stuff our way.
I haven't been begging anything.
Just like 2-for-1. Yeah, we want to decorate our table here with more than just Coffee Emporium.
Unless they're paying us.
And I want to put a nice little I would take my face down for a big Under Armour
just
deal.
A giant Under Armour logo and then Steve Palazzolo under it.
Look, you guys, this is like sell your ad here. Like, you can replace our face, sell ad here.
You should write that in there in like the face hole that is currently just a blank space.
I will sell my face space.
Right. Think of it as like a facial tattoo.
Yeah. Let's see, you could bring in more revenue here.
Instead of a real facial tattoo, just where the blank space is in our
it would have
silhouettes.
It's got to go around my face, right? We don't keep the face up.
Right. Yeah, yeah. No, like in the gap, right? Where your eyes should be.
Where my So just an Under Armour logo where my eyes would be?
That's exactly it. So you can have an Under Armour logo. I'll have something else. Whoever wants to throw money at me. Well, local, yeah. I could get the Emporium in there. Whoever wants to throw the money at us, I will put that inside my face behind us. It's perfect.
Complete sellouts here.
Yeah.
Doing whatever for the money. Just trying to do what's best for PFF, you know what I mean?
Trying to make the company some money here.
Who else is going to break out this year, Sam? Cam Akers is on Zach's list.
There's a lot of year two running backs, I think, have a shot at it. Cam Akers, one. J.K. Dobbins, I think, is obviously in a phenomenal situation in terms of Baltimore. That offense is like a running back's dream. Like, you know, they average the highest amount of yardage before contact in the NFL. A huge, as long as Lamar Jackson remains, you know, the single most difficult offensive weapon to have to think about every pre-snap, the running back who's getting the touches is going to be reaping the rewards of that hesitation and the space that it creates. Right now, that's J.K. Dobbins.
The Derek Brown's on the list too, interior defensive lineman for the Carolina Panthers. And this is where I do think context is crucial, right? Overall, he came out as a good run defender from Auburn, power player, would impose his will on SEC defensive linemen, and wasn't a great pass rusher. But if you look at his run defense grade as a rookie, 51 overall for Derek Brown, 54 overall. But if you go through the actual plays, there's a lot of plays where Derek Brown just, it's more of a gap discipline issue than a block deconstruction issue. And I think those are the types of things that get better.
I've never heard that before.
Block deconstruction?
Yeah.
Yeah, you deconstruct.
Just created.
You deconstruct blocks.
I mean, I get it. It makes sense.
Or block destruction, I should say more.
It tallies. It block functionally makes sense. I've just never heard it described that way.
I think I used the wrong word. It should be block destruction issue. You want to destruct. You want to be destructive. So in other words, Derek Brown can shed blocks.
Yes.
He's good at not getting blocked. What he wasn't good at was being in the right place after he wasn't blocked and losing. So gap discipline is something I think does get, you know, should get better over time. So I think the run defense grade will get better for Derek Brown, but he was surprisingly effective as a pass rusher, 72.5 pass rush grade. Pressure totals weren't incredible, but it was solid. So I think Derek Brown does have a chance to get better. And again, I think that also, there's a lot of guys that just match the way they progressed in college. He wasn't a dominant player early in college. He always had the tools, the physicality, but he didn't really come into his own until his last couple seasons at Auburn.
Yeah, I was kind of impressed by him year one in terms of like how good of a pass rusher he is. I think ultimately when you're looking at these guys that are physical monsters in college, you're still going to be a physical monster in the NFL, particularly when you're doing it like against elite competition in college. That holds up. The question is, how quickly can you pick up all the nuance of technique and the sophistication of schemes like offense and defense to do the same things, because you're not suddenly weaker compared to everybody else. The step up in competition in terms of athletes is not that great from college to the NFL by and large, and it just sometimes takes these guys a little while to put everything else around it.
So Derek Brown's on the list. The other honorable mentions there I think are crucial players for their respective teams. There's a couple that stand out. Brandon Ayuk, wide receiver for the San Francisco 49ers. Michael Pittman, the receiver for the Indianapolis Colts. And Jalen Johnson, the cornerback for the Chicago Bears. When you talk about, like when we're always trying to preview the season, it's tough to say, well, Brandon Ayuk's going to be exceptional this year. He was really good as a rookie. We've criticized the Indianapolis Colts receiver situation. But if Michael Pittman takes a massive step forward, that mitigates some of it. The Chicago Bears have had a massive overhaul in their secondary the last couple of years, but if Jalen Johnson continues to progress, you know, he mitigates some of that. I think there's a lot of pressure on these particular second-year players, Brandon Ayuk, Michael Pittman, and Jalen Johnson, just because they're in vital roles for teams that are expecting to make the playoffs.
Jalen Johnson, I think, in particular, like the Chicago Bears got rid of Kyle Fuller in the offseason. When you look at that secondary, I don't think they have anybody that earned a PFF grade above 60 last year in it. So, like, Jalen Johnson was pretty good for a rookie, and the wheels came off that late in the year. Like, he hit the ground running and then tailed off as the season wore on. But they really need him to be good this year, because nobody else in that secondary looks like they are on paper.
Yeah, so I just think from a crucial role standpoint, those guys stand out, man. Cameron Dantzler, did we mention Dantzler yet?
No.
Another second-year corner mm-hmm. for the Vikings. So I think this highlights you. I think I've been higher on the Vikings than you have in general, right? When I look at their team building situation. Last year they drafted Jeff Gladney at corner and they drafted Cameron Dantzler. This year I loved their process for trading down and getting Wyatt Davis and also getting Christian Darrisaw,
yeah.
Right? The fact that Cameron Dantzler had a better rookie season than Jeff Gladney. Jeff Gladney's running into some off-field issues as well.
To put it mildly.
I just think this is a great way to highlight volume drafting, hedging your bets, so to speak. And, you know, the Vikings, they have two shots at finding starting offensive linemen with their strategy. They had two shots at finding a starting corner. And that's okay to take multiple shots to fill one or two positions.
Three, in fact. And actually, the third one might be not the most important, but might be a crucial one right now because they also drafted Harrison Hand in the fifth round last year. So they went cornerback first, third, and fifth rounds. And all three of them played, like, a lot. Like the three rookie cornerbacks they had combined for, like, 1,700 snaps or something last season. Now, Gladney looks like, I mean, he's not with the team right now because of what he's dealing with off the field, the accusations against him. So Dantzler is probably going to be the other starting cornerback. Remember, they brought in Patrick Peterson in the offseason. I think there's reasons to think that will be successful compared to how he's played in Arizona if Dantzler's the second guy. But now Harrison Hand is the guy who's all of a sudden had all the reps with the first team in mini camps and OTAs because everybody else is, like, Dantzler's been injured, so he hasn't been playing, and Gladney is away with the team. Harrison Hand played the least of the guys last year, 163 snaps, but he graded reasonably well. Like, if he all of a sudden takes advantage of this opportunity of basically being the starter for the entirety of the offseason, he's the guy that could, like, force his way into the number three job.
Yeah, there are. So again, I think it highlights strong process by the Vikings and where they are, and in the hit rate, it highlights, I think, that hit rate doesn't matter as much as that, right? The fact that you should be hitting on your first rounders. You should be hitting on Jeff Gladney over Cameron Dantzler. But now you could say, well, I'd rather have Dantzler plus a better first rounder. We could have had whoever else was drafted right around Jeff Gladney. But when you're trying to fill crucial positions, and you're trying to fill positions where you really need three to five legitimate good players at corner to get through a season, you do need three legitimate starters and a couple backups just for injury concern. I mean, so cornerback is the place to draft in volume. Receiver's a place to draft in volume. And I think it just highlights good process for the Vikings. That's why I'm a little bit higher, I think, on the Vikings maybe than you are, maybe than other people, because I do think their last 2 years of high volume drafting is going to start paying off here.
Yeah, and the point is you don't know that you're going to hit on this guy. So the Vikings desperately needed to come out of last year's draft with a starting cornerback, and probably two, to be honest. So you didn't just rely on the fact that you snagged one in the first round. You came back in the third and got some value with a guy like Dantzler who had phenomenal tape but was sliding in the draft because of the measurables that he put out between size and speed and those kinds of things. And then, okay, you've done. You've hit two. You've drafted two. You've got your first rounder. You've got contingency. No, they keep going. You draft Harrison Hand in the fifth round. You like the value of that as well. And, like, it's never a bad idea. The Vikings always have a ton of draft picks. So double, triple up a positions that you have an acute need in, because you never know if you fixed it with the guy that you thought was going to be really good. Maybe it's the guy you didn't think was great gets a better opportunity or just plays better at the next level, and he's the one that ends up emerging, you know, the cream rising to the top. And that's ultimately all you need. You just need somebody to win that job and prove that he's worth it.
I'm going to go wherever my mind takes me sometimes. This is what I was just thinking of. Doing Pittsburgh radio last week, and James Pierre, starting cornerback for the Steelers. That's the guy that they're banking on. So the Steelers, we've criticized their offseason for multiple reasons, right? The offensive line overhaul, drafting Najee Harris in the first round. I'm still most concerned about their secondary. And you look at Steven Nelson's out, and he's still out on the market, Steven Nelson, right?
I think so.
A guy that's graded pretty well for us, performed pretty well. But it's Joe Hayden at starting corner,
Cameron Sutton, kind of the other starting corner, but he's still more of a nickel, so maybe he plays outside and plays nickel. But repeating myself again, you need 3 to 5 corners. So the rest of the Steelers depth chart, Justin Lane, 2019 third rounder, hasn't really performed all that well. James Pierre was an undrafted free agent, played pretty well in a very, very limited time last year. And I think when you just go into the season with a guy like Pierre, who could be their number three, their 2/3 corner, right? They're starting outside corner and nickel, which is 70% of your life. There's just massive questions, man. It's a huge risk. Because even beyond that, it's like who else is going to play corner there for the Steelers? That's why teams like the Browns, who might have a guy like Greedy Williams as their 4th or 5th corner, and we think Greedy Williams is still pretty good, they feel like they're in a much better spot than, say, the Steelers, who James Pierre was okay in college, didn't play much last year, and they might be relying on him as a starter. It's tough to have confidence in that role. Now, maybe they've got a great evaluation on him and love the way he's been at practice, and Rashawn Gary's been dominating a practice and all that stuff, but it's tough to look at past evidence and project good future performance for a lot of these players maybe the teams are banking on.
Yeah, I mean, giving yourself multiple options at a specific problem spot is always a good plan. Going into a season, relying on a guy for whom the evidence is not strong or extensive is just always a risk. So any team now looking at their roster, right? We're in mid-June, late June. We're bearing down on the start of this sort of preseason process, training camps on the horizon, all these kinds of things. You know, once guys are back in the building and team building, decision makers are looking at this roster instead of saying, right, where are we strong, where are we weak? If you see those positions and you say, all right, our number 2 cornerback spot, we're relying on a guy with 300 career snaps. Are we comfortable with that? Our number 2 pass rusher, 200 snaps. What do we like? All these kinds of things, right? If those are things that jump out, specific spots that are going to be fairly significant contributions to the team this year, and you're relying on a guy that just doesn't have a lot of evidence behind him, you should be looking to the guy still available in free agency and saying, all right, who can come in that we can afford that just doubles our chances there? Like, who comes in? We might not love the guy as a player, but in this scheme, in this system, with his experience, maybe he ends up being a better option than the guy we think is better, but we think that based off 200 snaps, and anything can happen in 200 snaps. So I think there's a ton of teams throughout the NFL that should be looking at their rosters right now, identifying those spots and just adding bodies, like adding guys that probably aren't going to fix it, but at least increase your chances of it not being a train wreck, which is like, that's the key at this stage, right? You're late June, early July. The chance to like make a spot great from a bad position is gone. Free agency is over. Like, real free agency is over. The draft is done. There's no more like elite fixes. I mean, unless you're dabbling into the trade market, which is probably not happening. But there's no more like elite easy.
There is cut day though.
Yeah.
So I will say, and we'll talk about that plenty in August. But anticipating cuts, whether it's like disappointing young players who just never took that next step. There'll be some financial decisions made. Teams will move on from some veterans and have a young player maybe take over a role. So shrewd teams can still find a few players in late August. And look, that's why the NFL's fun. People were trying to make the argument recently. Was it our friend Ross Tucker, Football Podcast? Trying to say that the offseason's bigger than the season nowadays. And I don't know if that's necessarily true, but it really is this idea of like the season ends. You look to you've got free agency, you've got the draft. There's even news happening in minicamp and all this stuff. But then you've got cut day. Remember when Jadeveon Clowney got traded on like the first day of college football and that like stole the news cycle on a Saturday night and Andrew Luck retires? I mean, it really doesn't stop all the way up to the season. So if we're critical of a team leaving, a potential hole at corner or receiver or tackle or whatever it is, there might still be some time with cuts and potential trades. And of course, like you said, some of the street free agents right now.
Yeah. I mean, I just think the chance of adding like a massive upgrade anywhere is much smaller now than it was, a few months ago. But that doesn't mean you can't still add players that would actually make a significant difference to your team. And in particular, just make sure that a spot that's important is not going to be a disaster for you this year.
Just got an update that the Bobby Wagner interview is coming up in 10 minutes.
Is it?
According to my calendar.
Oh, okay.
But my calendar's not updated because it's not happening.
Yeah, your calendar's, not happening calendar's wrong.
So just a reminder, next week, PFF 50, we're going to be breaking it all down Monday and Thursday, and we're going to tease this Bobby Wagner interview on the first show that doesn't exist.
Ignore any reference to Bobby Wagner except the one talking about his position in the 50.
Right.
Yeah.
We will break down his ranking in the 50, but we won't talk to him.
No.
We will talk to him in the future, though.
Yes.
And it'll be great. And we've got some awesome questions for him.
Once he finds some time for us.
Yes. It's cool, though. We like Bobby, and he might be the top. Yeah, he's the top linebacker on the board. Little giveaway there.
Just spoiling the whole thing.
But tune in Monday. Don't even go to PFF.com. Don't read Sam's work. Tune in Monday only to hear the PFF 50.
I'm not sure that's...
Well, then they can click it.
Okay.
And
save it.
Follow along with
it. I see.
Yeah, because we need the click and we need the download. You need both.
Right.
Look at this. You're just honest to people. Download our podcast.
You might be a little too honest sometimes.
We're looking for sponsors. Right? You just tell the truth.
Yeah. You might be a little too honest sometimes.
I think.
Yeah.
All right. Professional tease. Tune in Monday for the entire PFF 50 or the top 25.
For half the PFF 50.
And then the second half on Thursday.
Yeah. Next week, the entire PFF 50.
That's
Monday,
right.
Not so much.
No, you ready to wrap it up? That was fun.
Yeah.
I like breakout players. I like late June episodes. We can just freestyle a little bit and talk about positive players. You can tell us all the players are going to drop, fall off a cliff soon.
Sweet.
We'll have that episode.
We need to come up with a name for that. You're good at naming things. What do you?
Big time throws.
Yeah.
Let us know. Do you like big time throws? I think that's a good.
No.
Anyway, I appreciate everybody. We appreciate everybody. Thanks for donating to Make-A-Wish. We're going to get Sam dressed up soon in my gear. And then tune in next week. The PFF 50 analysis, Monday and Thursday. And then call me Under Armour. See you guys next week.